Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again with another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, we've got, I think we had more than 150 questions submitted for tonight, so not...
In 2 hours.
Not lacking 2 hours, yeah. Okay, about a question a minute there for a period of time. Impressive. A lot of things we'll try to get to. Have no hopes of reaching every question. A lot of them had some redundant characteristics about them as well. So we've tried to condense this down in as much of a concise kind of listener question or format. We'll certainly look back at the Louisville game at this point in the season. Us breaking down a game for minute aspects is probably not going to happen all that frequently, but we will look at the broader pieces of the game, look at some recurring tendencies, and try to make as much sense as we can of not only what we saw Saturday, but what we've seen through the first six games of the year. So with that said, want to always thank Louisiana Hot Sauce. They're the people that make this podcast possible, that make the instant reaction possible, that make us be able to have two consistent products out each week. You more or less know when they are every time. I realize there's a little bit of fluctuation on the Friday pod, but happy to be able to do these and lucky to be able to partner with Louisiana.
I think we're going to do what? Wednesday record and Thursday morning release, hopefully?
Yeah.
Boston College week's obviously very important. Where do you want to start tonight? I'm seeing a whole lot of this stuff on social media that Florida State sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you, man, I just don't agree, right? I'm not trying to be like fake positive here. However, this is still a pretty decent team. I think they are somewhere between that, like, I don't know, 30 and 40 range, right? Once I start looking at these teams and I look at who's actually on these teams and how they play, it's very tough for me to believe that Florida State is like outside the top 30 or top 40, you know?
Mm-hmm.
However, circumstance have made their record bad. Like they're a decent team to me with a bad record. And that's not all bad because, look, last year they had a decent record, and it made it very tough to talk about some of the issues. In fact, you know, you would look at some of the comments you got on emails calling us haters and whatnot. People didn't want to hear it. But now a lot of the same issues exist. They did not get fixed as we thought they might. And now that the losses have mounted, people want to hear about them.
I would say, Bud, that this is a good team that is probably the worst situational team I've ever seen, at least that I can remember. It immediately jumps to mind. A team that has given itself more kind of self-inflicted wounds than any other team that I can recall. It just doesn't make the simple plays that lead to winning a football game, and that's been pretty consistent all year. So a decent team overall. You would more than expect that with a roster that reflects the way that this one does. But overall, it's a decent team that has killed itself when it mattered most and has a record of 2-4. Certainly that record could be a little bit better. I'll also point out in your two wins, the other team's been throwing the ball into the end zone to tie the game. So you haven't had a complete game, haven't been at any time really the team that you thought you could be coming into the year.
If you take the combination of elite talent, which this team still has a lot of, especially on defense, and poor coaching, and you add those two things together, it's just still hard because the talent level's so high to get anything really below decent, right? Like unless this team just quits. So I reserve the right to change my mind on this team if they do go and lay an egg and don't try against Boston College or, you know, Syracuse or whatever. I just wanted to say that. I still think they're a decent team, man. They're just decent's not good enough when you recruit the talent Florida State brings in.
All right, so there was a situation at the end of the game, but we won't spend too much time on it. Honestly, I don't think this is that big of a deal. I mean, these type of things happen all the time, and if this is going to be Florida State's biggest flashpoint between coaches and fans, this is really pretty minor. I mean, Bill Curry had a brick thrown through his window when he was coaching at Alabama. Just crazy stuff happens with crazy people who really, really, I would say, even overvalue college football. So, again, if this is going to be the worst of fan interactions with coaches, then I would say that we're probably pretty fortunate. But you do have a situation that doesn't look great where you have Jimbo Fisher and a fan getting into some kind of verbal altercation at the end of the game.
Yeah, look, the fan is really annoying for just sitting there yelling, get new coaches, get new coaches, get new coaches. However, he doesn't cuss. He doesn't threaten Fisher at all or Fisher's players. I don't think it was a smart move if you're Jimbo to double down on this. It's bad PR. That fan's a paying customer. He took his time out of his day and money to go in the stands and make that sign and yell at you. And you kind of just have to sit there and take it. However, I thought, despite the fact that doubling down today in the press conference about having no regrets doing what he did might have been a mistake, I do think the rationale that he offered today, as opposed to the one he initially offered, makes a little more sense. And that was, you have kids of some of the coaches there, like families of them, right by the tunnel. To which I can say, hey, I totally understand that. You don't want, you know, as the head coach, to have your assistants' kids over there, you know, hearing fans yell, hey, you know, fire your dad or that kind of stuff, or get new coaches. I would offer a suggestion, though, in that because Jimbo has twice engaged this guy, or at least doubled down on doing so, you're only going to inspire copycats from this point forward. And because this season is such a train wreck, I would say don't have the families of the coaches waiting in the tunnel there. Just for the rest of the year. I know they've done it for a while, but it's been an awful while since they've been over at home and have been this poorly coached. So I would just suggest, if that's actually a concern of Jimbo, which I honestly and earnestly believe it is, don't have them there.
We'll look at it, see if anything like this comes up, but I think that's a good suggestion and a good way to avoid a similar situation.
Jimbo today got asked a lot of questions, by the way, about like coaching changes and this and that, and he again used the word season a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
And look, Jimbo already has a reputation among some in the coaching community as being difficult to work for. If he's going to make coaching changes, which I believe he will, he does not want to poison that pool of potential coaches. So he does not want to like further the reputation of being tough to work for, and he does not want to be known as a guy who throws his coaches under the bus during the season or before he's about to make a change. In no way does that help the coaches or the players. I'm sure they already know the heat's on them. So I don't expect Jimbo to say, I'm going to make major coaching changes at the end of the year. That's just not going to happen. I know people want us as media to ask him more questions about that, and we asked him today about every single possible way we could. It's not a debate or an interrogation. It's just a press conference, right? I think he got asked 5 or 6 questions about that topic. He said he evaluates coaches at the end of the season. Now, granted, if the season's goals are all over, maybe you can do that a game or two early. I don't think that's too crazy, especially if you are trying to send a signal to somebody. But you don't have to do that. And I don't think Jimbo's comments, he's kind of in a no-win situation there, right? Like he can't make fans happy, and he also can't like jeopardize the remaining goals that the team has this year by saying, hey, I'm going to fire these guys, you know, after only 6 games.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll stay here for just a second, although we do have a ton of questions surrounding it. You and I have talked a little bit both on and off air about this. Just kind of off the cuff, where would you put maybe the over-under on the number of changes or the amount of turnover that you might see?
I'm going to say an over-under. So that if you're setting an over-under, you have to believe there's like a reasonable chance it goes over or under, right? I'm going to say 4, maybe 3, somewhere in there.
I put the number at 3.5 on an interview that I did last week, and I think I'm going to hold by that. I think you see changes on both sides of the ball, and it wouldn't shock me at all to see him at 4, maybe 5, depending on how it breaks out. But I think you see more. You're not going to solve this problem just by getting a new coordinator and maybe replacing your linebackers coach or something like that. And I've said this for 2 weeks now. This is a larger issue. It's a problem kind of deeply intertwined within the culture of the program at this point. And I think if you're really serious about getting things back on track, this is not a Band-Aid. There is no panacea in general for this situation, but it's certainly not, you know, replacing 2 coaches and convincing yourself that you can, you know, jump right back into the swing of things. So something we'll have a lot of time to talk about, monitor, and discuss as to how this plays out, but just something I wanted to ask you off the top here. Bud, before we jump solely into questions, let's have a quick little back and forth as to a subject that we've mentioned multiple times, a source of frustration for both of us. We're not trying to beat anybody up, but there continues to be a real look, Jimbo Fisher knows 1,000 times more about football than I do, and I'm not trying to suggest otherwise, but some of the comments that he continues to make around like points and grabbing the lead and some of the decision making, having a real hard time trying to find out where he's coming from, or the fact that he's consistent with him. I guess I have to give him credit for consistency, but it is kind of consistently head-scratching to hear a coach continue to verbalize some things about this subject.
Yeah, I mean, he may be able to change his people, but I don't know if he can change his beliefs. And unless he gets another Jameis, these beliefs will continue to cost him games. Specifically, the really, really bad decision-making when it comes to going for it, kicking, or punting. On his coach's show, he criticized the Louisville decision to go for it on 4th and 1.5 from the, would that be like the 25, I guess? Quote, they had a 42-yard field goal to make it and went for it on 4th and 1.5. It could have put them ahead. And it gave us a chance to win the game. First of all, that's second guessing because they missed it. But first guessing, Louisville made the right call there. There's almost 5 minutes left in the game, I believe. Florida State had been moving the ball great. You really think you're going to hold them to no points as they come back down the field at just kicking a field goal? Louisville had been moving the ball well. Both sides had. The game at this point is trending well over the total, probably going to be in the 60s. Louisville made the right call. Jimbo criticized it. Then he doubled down on his statement as well about kicking the field goal on the 4th and 3 from the 27. Always take the points and get the lead, he said, of his decision. It's just really, it's scary to think that even if he makes all these changes, he's still going to keep bungling these game management decisions. And to me, this isn't play calling. This is game management, or rather mismanagement. I don't want to rant on this every single show, but to have those two comments line up next to each other was disappointing, man. It shows that he doesn't get it, at least in that area. I think he's a brilliant coach in a lot of other areas, but that's just a huge blind spot.
All right, bud, jumping into questions, we'll start off with one that we had a significant amount of questions that basically asked the same thing. So this will be one question, and that is, how likely is Florida State to make a bowl game this year?
I got to tell you, I think that they are about a coin flip at this point.
Yeah.
I do expect them, if they are in striking range, which means if they don't lose the Boston College game, to reschedule the Louisiana Monroe game. There also may be some insurance purposes why they need to do that too, I was told. So given that, that's going to be a win. Delaware State's a win. So there you're at 4. Can you find 2 more out of the remaining 4, which would be at Boston College, host Syracuse, at Clemson, at Florida? Well, you're not going to beat Clemson. So
this all comes down to the Syracuse game, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
Just ridiculous for us to say, but exactly. I said last week that there was no greater kind of divergent point of the season than what we watched on Saturday, how it was going to play out. And you lost, and you're 2-4, and you're 0-for-doke for the season currently, and you're sitting here talking about whether or not you're going to be bowl eligible, and you lose the longest running bowl streak in college football. So, frustrating point of conversation, but something that a lot of people are asking about. It's a legitimate question, and not to be redundant, bud, but I'm right there with you. I think it's a 50-50 proposition, and it really comes down to whether you win on Friday night and if you can beat Syracuse.
I completely agree. Can we talk about something, by the way, here? This is just emerging on the Twitter timeline. You saw the Jim McElwain death threat thing today, right?
I did. I honestly kind of rolled my eyes at it, but I did see that, yes.
I mean, okay, so he claimed that his family, his players, and his I think it's a pretty good lesson for the way things are. There's a lot of hate in this world and a lot of anger, and yet it's a freedom to show it. The hard part is obviously when it's threats against your own players, death threats to your families, the ill will that's brought upon out there. And yet I think it's really one of those deals that really is a pretty good testament to what's going on out there nationally. There's a lot of angry people, and in this business, we're the ones you take shots at. That's the way it is. So Florida took this pretty seriously, right? And then tonight they released a statement that says, the University Athletic Association takes the safety of our student athletes, coaches, staff, and families very seriously. Our administration met with Coach Mack this afternoon, and he offered no additional details. Mm. Steve McLean, Senior Associate Athletic Director. This is the same guy who claimed that the shark humping thing was an attack on his family, remember? Engram, you don't think Jim McElwain would make up death threats, do you?
I honestly hadn't seen that report.
That's pretty shocking for the school to release a statement like that, right? And basically throw him under the bus, because the school is saying, hey, Jim, you're full of
shit. And that's exactly what that is. Yeah, that's exactly what that is.
You think that'll hurt recruiting, maybe? like if I'm recruiting against Florida now, I'm saying, yeah, their fans give you death threats.
Right. Or their coach is a...
And their coach didn't report it.
Right. Or he just made something up standing at a podium. Who knows? So
I'm sorry to interject. I know it's, that we did not receive a question about that, but I'm watching.
I think any question, Bud, that leads to a reference of the shark humping photos of the summer are really very much welcomed at this point. So anything for a momentary distraction of our own problems. But
do you think he's required by some law to report that if it's a threat against a student? And if so, if you're Florida, do you try to use that to terminate his contract?
That's a good question. That's a really great question as to if he's contractually or legally stipulated to report that and provide full details. Interesting. Very interesting. It's something that I just kind of was a little bit skeptical and dismissive of as soon as I heard it. And I only think that all the more after reading that most recent update.
Yeah, that was interesting. All right.
Any chance that Jimbo makes no coaching changes after the season?
Sure, if he's at Texas A&M. Other than that, no. I really don't think so. I mean, I've got people forwarding me emails that they're sending to the boosters saying that they're not going to be renewing your tickets if the coach situation remains the same. I would put the odds at Florida State staff as the same next year at 0.0%.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think that process has started. I'm not saying that there's been any kind of agreement with parties, but I'm fully confident in sitting here and telling you that maybe the initial conversations that would need to take place have begun with one or two people.
So let's talk about the Texas A&M situation real quick. I didn't put a question here because I got a lot of emails about this. This is something that you and I first talked about, I think, after the NC State game. I received, and I think Rick Ballew was the first media member to actually put this out publicly, but his information is a little bit different than mine. I received a tip from a guy who's fairly well connected at Texas A&M that if A&M cans Kevin Sumlin, which I'm not sure they're going to do at this point because, you know, A&M's looking a lot better, that they would be all in after Jimbo. And that the James Franklin thing, you know, like they were going to go after James Franklin was kind of a smokescreen. A&M is obviously loaded with money. And they, you know, hate that Texas is ahead of them in a lot of areas and blah, blah, blah. I didn't think much of it because like, okay, yeah, well, whatever. But then another guy who I know independently spoke with someone who I'm pretty sure does not know my guy at A&M. And he said the same exact thing. Like, hey, A&M is going to come after Jimbo hard if someone is gone. And there's some chance, by the way, that someone could take a UCLA or an Arizona or an Arizona State if one of those jobs comes open, because I'm sure he's not real pleased that fans are sending him hate mail with the N-word.
Yeah.
Right? That's not a real fun situation and to always be on the hot seat. And if you're A&M, you're either going to have to extend someone for recruiting purposes or can him. It's not like you can keep giving him one-year deals. Would Jimbo leave? I have no idea. Certainly, it's easier to rework a program than it is to, like, maintain. I know Nick Saban has written about this. I know some other coaches have as well. You know, we saw things go really south for Urban Meyer at Florida. It's just easier to flip a culture, right? Maybe he would. I don't know. But that would be really interesting. I don't know. I mean, we'll see. But that's – now, the thing that Ballew – was reporting that I've not heard. I've not heard that Jimbo would be legitimately interested in it, right? I have no idea if he would or not. I just have heard that A&M would be very interested in Jimbo. So my information is coming from more the A&M side as opposed to, I believe, Ballew's. I'm not sure where it's coming from.
Yeah. We'll see. I mean, you know, what I said when we first had that conversation is that the best thing for Florida State would be to have a 7-4, 8-3 type season at that point and put as good of a product together to where you had a boosters that were still legitimately excited and could, with a straight face, announce Jimbo Fisher as this, you know, one of the better 4 or 5 coaching hires that could possibly made. Not sure that it would be viewed that way, and it certainly won't be viewed that way if Florida State's sitting with 6 losses at the end of the year or something like that. So certainly a lot of this, or at least part of this, is dependent on how Florida State continues to play as to if he's really a viable candidate. We'll see. It would be interesting to see Florida State lose a coach. There would be aspects of that that would possibly be the best thing that could happen to him as far as contractually freeing them up from an agreement that probably wasn't two beneficiary.
Maybe one of the worst contracts in sports.
Exactly.
I mean, legitimately. Now, that is important to note, by the way. For people who don't realize this, Jimbo's buyout is $40 million if Florida State has to buy it out. However, if he leaves on his own volition, like for another school, the only money that is owed is the remaining money on the contracts of the assistants who are not retained by the university. So that would only be like $2 or $3 million. That's much different than 40.
Much different than 40. We'll see. I mean, it's something that's out there. Anybody that tells you that they've been sitting on exclusive knowledge about this or anything is kidding. I mean, it's something that's been bouncing around the fan base for a couple weeks now. We'll see. Something that we'll continue to monitor, and if it becomes a serious situation, we'll talk about it with in a serious manner. But at this point, I think Florida State has to start winning games before you can look at somebody backing up the truck to bring Jimbo Fisher anywhere. So with that, Bud, let's move to the next question. This is something I thought was pretty interesting. If you had to pick between two options, every assistant except Kelly replaced or only Kelly replaced, what point does it become hard to pick?
Well, I think I would take the latter just because I feel like you need to affect some cultural change within the program, and you cannot do that with just one guy.
Okay. So that would actually be the former.
I'm sorry. Yes, the former. Right. The multiple changes, yeah. I think, is right. What you need. And if that's whole staff, including, you know, strength staff, my answer is even stronger.
I see what you did there. I mean, like I said a couple minutes ago, this is not there's not one or two people that you can change over and have this thing be back on the right track, in my opinion. This is a change in culture that has to happen, and I'm not sure how you could sell that with Charles Kelly running around as defense coordinator again, but certainly would be a nice thing to rid yourself of some other situations on the staff that may very well have grown pretty stale. So good question there. Creative, not just the same kind of batch of things that we occasionally get emailed to us.
Here's the next question. I've heard that Frenchie doesn't like Blackman and is causing some issues in the locker room, stirring the pot. Have you guys heard anything about this going on? Nothing like concrete enough that I can report there. However, his Twitter and I believe Instagram are like not private. So you can just see him publicly and consistently retweeting things about how Florida State would have a much better record if he was starting.
Yeah.
So to me, that doesn't seem very supportive of Blackman. Put that together with some of the whispers, then certainly I could see where some of this news or some of this, you know, kind of rumors come from.
It's something I've debated as to whether or not I would mention on the pod. Mark me down as somebody who's not a big a lover of Francois in general. I don't know that he's a bad teammate, but I've had some things mentioned to me that might make me think that if Francois were to, if Blackman were to cement himself in that job and Francois were to transfer or go somewhere else, certainly wouldn't break my heart. And, what he's doing on social media is in my opinion, not someone displaying a whole lot of great leadership characteristics at the very least. My frustrations with Francois stem long before any kind of retweets or anything else that he's posted out there. But I'm not sure that he's always been the greatest force in the locker room. And, he's only a redshirt freshman, so people certainly mature and change over time, and that's possible. But from what I've heard so far, if he were to go elsewhere, it wouldn't break my heart and might not be the worst thing for the locker room in general.
So he pretty clearly searches his name on Twitter, and he just retweeted, this team was hanging with Alabama before DeAndre Francois got hurt.
He may be the most important player in college football.
He may be the most important player in college football.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the stuff about how, like, Florida State would be, would only have the one loss. Look, man, I feel for the kid. I do think he worked hard and didn't get a chance really to play enough this year because he got hurt. But at the same time, like, what is this free 12 tour? Like, you know what I'm saying? I don't know. Yeah, I can't dismiss the question. All right, how about that?
I think that's fair enough.
Next question. Will Jimbo actually make the needed changes, or is he like an alcoholic that doesn't realize he has a problem? What are y'all hearing? Well, I think we already answered this one. We are hearing that he will make some changes. The question is going to be, will he make enough changes to affect cultural change And will he make the right changes? Like, will he hire people who are not yes men? Or will he continue to overvalue loyalty and stability? I think those are important values, but you can put too much emphasis on those, and that can hurt you. Ingram, question. Does Jimbo's constant talk about faith in his coaching staff and players being there to make the play, but just needing to find those inches concern you that the appropriate staff changes won't be made following the season? Today you mentioned that the coaching is there, and he just needs to be better coaching on four or five plays. This is concerning to me. Wondering what you guys think. P.S. Whenever I hear anything about inches, I want to vomit now. I do have to say, I feel like we already answered this one as well. There are certain things he can't say in a press conference, right? And he's just not going to say. And look, honestly, he shouldn't say in a press conference for the betterment of the program and also for his own image. So I don't take him at his word when he says the coaching's there. I think he knows it's not. He asked Derwin last year, what's missing? On the Showtime show, you saw him ask the coaches there, hey, guys, we're missing something. He knows they're missing something, and they're still missing something. And I think he probably knows that he got duped last year in deciding to bring those guys back. With the exception of Odell Haggins and Tim Brewster, would you be comfortable if every other coach on the staff was replaced? 100%. If they could keep two, give back seven, trade, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, I think that would really help flip the culture, and I think Jimbo could find better replacements at almost all those other spots. Yes. What do you think?
Yeah, I'd definitely take it. Like I said, I think Jay Graham may do a little bit of a better job than we necessarily give him credit for, but I wouldn't hold anybody back outside of those two that were mentioned in the original question. So, absolutely.
Is it possible that having Cook and Winston on the team to erase mistakes stunted Jimbo's growth as a play caller and game manager? No, I mean, because he already had, 3 years before he had any of those guys to become a play caller and game manager, and plus all the time he was at LSU. I feel like it maybe reinforced some bad habits because he won in spite of his game managing. I don't really hate him as a play caller. I just think he's a poor game manager, and the pace thing really hurts as well.
I would split those out. Play caller, no, I don't think so. Game manager, I personally think there's probably some credence there. Let you get into some bad habits, let you have way too much confidence that you can find the perfect play and have people execute it, or just that Dalvin's going to make one guy miss in the backfield and turn a 2 yard loss into a 39 yard gain. I do think in management of the game that maybe having two transcendent players delayed in maybe approaching some more modern aspects of the game, pace in particular.
I also think that some of the things we're hearing about the inner workings of the program now that were the same things we heard back in 2011, 2012 are starting to crop up again, and our longtime listeners will remember what those are. And that to me says that maybe the winning papered over the problems, but that the actual philosophy and coaching style in tough times did not change. Any suggestion of a libation that will dull the pain of the abject disaster that is this season? Partial to bourbon, but open to anything. Well, Ingram, I think this is a perfect time. You mentioned the Nolcast Bloody Mary.
Yes, absolutely. And with the games that remain and noon game exclusivity, evidently, from this point out, want to thank our friends at Madison Social. I know it's tough for them with some of the schedules, and noon games aren't friendly to anybody, businesses included. Ask that you always keep them in mind and really make a little bit of an extra effort this year to support our sponsors. And in a year the schedule and the season, the way that's played out, is not going to do them any favors. So, Bud, I know I know this weekend was maybe like the last trip that people had kind of planned around and had real intent on making their way to campus. But do just want to remind people how instrumental the For the Table Restaurant Group has been for us. Madison Social has been there with us since day one, and there's no better place to enjoy Tallahassee on a Saturday or really any other day, but no better way to support the Nolcast by going in and mentioning that maybe you heard us or that they were frequented as a business as a byproduct of listening to this podcast.
Now, Ingram, you know what's coming up. It's Parents Weekend, November 3rd and 4th. They're hosting the Syracuse game. Parents Weekend for local businesses is always really big, and I got to tell y'all, If you're an adult listening to this podcast, like maybe you have a kid going to Florida State, you're up there for Parents Weekend, Madison Social is a great place to go. So is Township and Central. Like, it's a place where I feel like you can go as someone who's 40 or 50 with your college age kid and not feel old. And yet the kid won't think, okay, this place is lame and I'm going to take my parents there because they're not going to, you know, go to some hip place. It's a real nice blend there that I think you guys will be able to enjoy. And certainly tell them the NoCast sent you. We appreciate it, and we'll keep the hot takes coming.
All right, bud. I think this is a particularly good question. It's something that I almost started to get into earlier and glad I didn't. But question asks, what are the implications of recruiting if Jimbo doesn't evaluate and fire the coaches before the early signing day? He stated he wouldn't evaluate coaches till the season over. Is this a good or bad decision, and how much could it have an impact on this year's class?
So this is something that I'm going to have to think about hard and really take a look at the class and think, okay, would this guy leave if a certain coach is fired before signing day, right? And the signing day, I believe, is like December 20th, the early signing day. I think that there are some negative implications if you – I know there's a lot of them if you wait until after signing day to fire a bunch of coaches, right? Because then you're going to have a lot of pissed off kids who don't trust you. You need to make these changes before signing day, in my opinion, and then inform the kids, hey, if you were committed to us as a program, please still sign. If you weren't, then we understand if you're going to wait until the February signing period. But at least give us the opportunity to show you who we're going to, what new guy we're going to bring in. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Very much so.
Okay. I know he said today he's going to wait until after the season to evaluate the coaches. That's nonsense. All right. We know Jimbo evaluates these guys every single week. Now, that doesn't mean he always evaluates them correctly. We saw last year how he kept all these guys on staff. Probably not the best decision. And he's the guy, A, in the best position to evaluate them, and B, paid a whole lot of money to evaluate them. By the way, you know he's on pace this year, assuming that their scoring pace stays constant. Make $275,000 per offensive touchdown.
Per touchdown. Score. That's nice. That's good.
That is incredible.
It's a good salary if you can grab that. A little more, quarter mil for sticking it in the end zone.
All right. In a perfect world, would it be a benefit for Florida State for a humble Jimbo to integrate a person on the offensive staff that has extensive background in the spread? I was operating under the premise that keeping Sanders was a given, but I'm starting to feel a best case going forward scenario is getting someone who can incorporate small amounts of the spread style into Jimbo's core philosophy. Yeah. He's had some guys on his staff before, by the way, who want to run some more spread stuff. One of them is named James Colton.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Who's now at Georgia. Ultimately, Jimbo's going to call his offense, right? Main thing with Jimbo is not really what he calls. It's just how he manages the game and how he manages certain situations. He constantly harps on his team needing to play situations better. But the problem is he doesn't really put him in good situations to succeed. I think if you got a guy, though, from the spread to come back, and right now they're a very pro-style type thing. I mean, Randy Sanders is a very pro-style guy. Jake Graham, same thing. Maybe you could get him to maybe go for some more fourth downs, which would certainly help. He's dead last in the nation by a mile during his coaching career. I mean, it's not even close. Maybe you could get them to hurry up a little more. Ingram, did you see they actually increased their pace to 128th nationally?
I did. I saw that. That's progress.
Take that,
UTEP. I saw where they went for a fourth down, too. So
now, granted, that was a desperation fourth down attempt, but at least they did it.
Yeah. It was desperation. You're right. But I was happy to at least see them run a play on third down that appeared to very much have intent of setting up a more manageable fourth down.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was it was funny because I tweeted out, why not run it here and set up for fourth down? And they did it, and people thought I was like Nostradamus. And I was like, guys, it's just common sense. You just don't see the head coach use the common sense very often, so you think I'm like some kind of genius. No, I'm not.
Yes.
Oh, and then also maybe you could have him run the quarterback a little more, which, by the way, I had a source on the team tell me that that was a cold run, that Blackman was not supposed to pull that. I know Jimbo today blamed it on – improper ball placement, like he put it on the
wrong hip, basically. Yeah,
yeah, like it was too high, right, and not in the belly form. I had a guy on the team tell me that one of the running backs said that was a called handoff, and Blackman tried to improvise that, like because he had so much success running it in the last couple of plays,
right.
So there's certainly a possibility that the 18-year-old freshman there just totally goofed that. I can't confirm that. Jimbo will not answer that question. Obviously, he doesn't really answer questions about the play calling or what the actual design of the play was too often. But some other insider information here. One of the picks was on Izzo for not turning the right way. Both the sacks were on Blackman. And in both the situations, he on the one time, he didn't read the right side of the field, right? So, like, generally they look and they see where they have the numbers advantage, and then they decide pre-snap which side of the field to work. And that's just how it works, right? Nobody, like, this is not Madden. You're not, like, you don't have an overhead cam, and you're not reading four different guys at once. So that was one of the sacks, which it was like, oh, nobody's open. He's holding the ball for way too long. Well, that's because he read the wrong side of the field, and that's going to happen. On the other sack, he actually had the guy open, stared him down, and didn't trust his eyes and didn't pull the trigger. So, he ended up holding the ball for way too long. The guy was open, and he didn't throw it. So I think there are other times, actually, where the offensive line allowed pressure, but it is interesting to note that both the sacks were actually the QB's fault. One of the two picks was not his fault, though.
Good stuff. Certainly gives you a little bit of perspective on what you saw from
Saturday. He's an 18-year-old. It's going to happen. I think if you have Francois at this point, you're probably 4-2 instead of 2-4. I don't buy the 5-1 stuff, but I think there's a good chance you win two of the three, the NC State, Miami, Louisville, three home losses.
But next question is, I get it that Florida State is essentially handcuffed and forcing Jimbo to do much of anything, but are they willing
because to... Because the $40 million buyout?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Are they willing to pay Charles Kelly's buyout? And will Jimbo even fire him because doing so makes Jimbo basically admit he was wrong in fighting for Kelly's original extension?
That's a great question. The people I talk to say they're going to find a way to make a change there. Now, what you have to figure out here, look at those emails we're getting forwarded, right? And if you want to send me yours that you've sent to the booster saying you're not going to renew, well, I'll read them. I mean, maybe we'll do a whole show on it. I don't know. At some point, you have to take a look at the money that you're losing, right? In people not renewing your tickets, not renewing their tickets at the same level. And you have to say, okay, this is becoming untenable. We have got to be able to come up with the money to buy a guy out. And it's like, what? It's like 2.4 or something like that. It's not something insane.
Right.
It's not like there's a whole lot of coaches you have to buy out. A lot of these guys are not on long-term deals. I think most of them have 0 or 1 years remaining after this year. So, yeah, I don't think the money's going to be the issue there. The second part there, Jimbo's just going to have to get
over
that.
I'll get to the second part here. I'll say, if you're Florida State, you can't play college football at the level that you want to and talk about having any difficulty with buying out a defensive coordinator's $2-point-something million buyout. I mean, it sucks. It's an admission of failure on Fisher's part, and we've talked about this before. But that can't stop you from doing what has to be done. Now, if we're talking about a head coaching talk and how much guaranteed money there is, they're a completely different conversation. But if you want to be one of the best five programs in the country and you want to play this at the highest level that's possible, which institutionally this place has for the last 35 years or so, then you can't talk about a buyout being a hurdle to finding a new defense coordinator.
You can't keep doubling down on your mistake, man.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Exactly. Everybody makes mistakes. You're not perfect, right? Like, I think a lot of people... Man, a lot of people really want to like Jimbo, you know? Sometimes he just makes it hard. And I think this is kind of one of the things. Like, it's also okay in a press conference to say, right now we are not coaching and playing well enough. We know we are not up to the standard that Florida State football fans expect. It's okay to admit this is a bad season. He's not really once done that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of weird. It's like people – this is why people freak out, because they think, does Jimbo not see it? Does he not get it? It's okay to say, look, this is not up to the standard. We know we must play better. It's okay. Maybe he'll do it. I don't know. Maybe if they take another loss on Friday. Also, I assume Jimbo likes to win, but not making changes is very late Bowden years-like. Do you think he would make changes at the DC spot and wide receiver coaching spot, or is he too stubborn and willing to take butt whippings with, quote, loyal assistants? Well, I think we already answered that, and the answer to those, in my opinion, is going to be yes to both. The person says, side note, of course the assistants are loyal. They know nobody else wants their... butts, so they're grateful Jimbo keeps them hired. Thanks for all you guys do with the Nolcast. Maybe two more here. Is there any chance FSU can hire Mike Bloomgren away from Stanford? He's their offensive line coach and offensive coordinator. He's from Tallahassee and graduated from Florida State. Did we already talk about this a couple weeks ago?
We talked about this a couple weeks ago. We did.
All right. The answer is he makes enough money to actually enjoy living in Palo Alto, California, which is an absolutely gorgeous place. There is no way in hell that I would leave Palo Alto if I made enough money to afford to live there. and live comfortably there for Tallahassee. Everybody has different set of circumstances and you know, criteria for where they want to live. Can't 100% rule it out, but it doesn't seem likely. Man, we got a lot of good questions here. Other than Charles Kelly, what coaching staff changes need to happen the most? I would say probably receiver and offensive line, just because of the reputations those units are getting and the ability to negatively recruit against Florida State at those positions on the recruiting trail. Looking into the future with Francois coming back and Blackman clearly having the better touch and hand talent, who do you start next year? I don't know, because I don't know how healthy Francois is going to be when he comes back, and I don't know how much Blackman is going to progress. It's really tough, but I think it is telling that Blackman has played well enough at times to not think that Francois is just automatically going to get that job back.
Agree with you. Nothing more to add on that that particular subject. Do you think Fisher should modify the process? Obviously, players aren't buying in. And do you think things like ending the social media ban might help an older staff connect with the players to regain trust?
I think those things are kind of unrelated, right? Now, it does. I do think the social media ban is kind of out of touch at times because it's sort of coming from like a very country coach who didn't grow up with social media. And a very older staff that clearly doesn't use social media very much. I think Brewster is the only guy who actually tweets on the staff. It is a much older staff than all the rivals Florida State recruits against and by like a whole standard deviation or two. However, I don't think that's really impacting their play right now. But there are certain parts of the process that need to be looked at.
You want to regain trust. Have kids know that they can line up right and know their assignment and know exactly what's being asked of them. Trust is a conversation about putting kids in the best place to succeed and having all the work that they do in June, July, August, and everything else come out in a form that gives them a place to be as good as possible on the field. I would not, as you said, I would not correlate a social media ban and trust that the players have with the coaching staff.
Last one here. First off, thanks so much for the great coverage, good insight, and honest analysis. Couple of related questions. How bad has Jimbo squandered FSU's talent level and opportunity, with rivals being down generational talents like Cook and Derwin, strength of schedule, etc., since 2013? Would it be fair to say we should have one more title during this era, or at least have played for one more? It seems like we went from potential dynasty to shades of the lost decade overnight. Meanwhile, Clemson has passed us, and Miami is knocking on the door. I know you have mentioned potential fixes like coaching changes, game management, and culture. Is there still time to turn things around? Walk us off the edge here, or the ledge here, please. What do you think, man?
No, I don't think it's. I mean, there's certainly years that you can look back and be frustrated, but I don't think as a fan base you can look back and be like, "Well, this coach should have delivered us another title." I'm not sure that's there.
You might be able to say that about Bowden, to be honest, or in that 14-year stretch.
Oh, hell yeah. You look at any, yeah, look at 97. There's a lot of years you could look. We won't go down that path real quickly. As far as, like, generational talents like Derwin and Cook, look, Derwin is a really good player. One, he doesn't play the most impactful position. I know you move him around a lot, but expecting, like, a safety to lead you to a championship is you're going to be disappointed more times than not. So the Derwin James thing is frustrating. One of the many frustrating parts about this season is that you've basically, I don't know, want to say wasted, but Derwin James's time in Tallahassee will come and go, and there will be nothing significant to show for it. So I can understand people's frustrations there, but I just don't know that when you sign a five-star safety that in your mind you should think that, like, this is the piece that's going to lead us to trophies. I know there's a ton of frustration in general that people have with the program right now. That's very, very obvious. But I don't know that you can necessarily go back and say, like, should have won here, should have done this, etc. For the most part, 2012 is something that stands out in my mind. But for the most part, I think you've done about as well as you can. 2014 is obviously frustrating. You also went undefeated and made it to the college football playoffs. So at that point, a little bit of a coin flip, and obviously you were unlucky and fell on your face in the Oregon game. But for the most part, I think you've done about as much as you could with this window.
Yeah, I agree with that. And 2014 might be the root of some of your problems, right? In that you tolerated some stuff because you were still winning. Mm. 2015 was a legitimate rebuilding year. They played a paper soft schedule that year. I mean, there were only, what, one, two, three ranked teams on that schedule, including the bowl game. Clemson, Florida, and Houston. I mean, that was a rebuilding year, though. It legitimately was a rebuilding year. They went 10-3 in a rebuilding year. I thought that was a fine year. Last year, I thought they lost one too many games. This year, I think that they are losing probably one to two too many games. But look, the losses add up, man. Unfortunately, how they happen, if they keep happening the same way, ways that are in sometimes, you know, correctable, that's concerning. So, yeah, I think they should have won their title? Do I think they should have played for another one? Yes, probably in 2014 if they had been better coached and Jimbo had kept a better feel for that team. But that was very tough, man. You had a lot of different stuff going on there. So I think what I'll end tonight's show with, I believe Jimbo Fisher has earned the right to make coaching changes. I don't know if he's earned the trust that he's going to make the right coaching changes. What do you think about that?
I think that's a fair way of putting it, man. There's certainly a lot of reason to have skepticism as to what the future looks like, or if this is the regime to make the right changes. But you don't not let a guy go through a coordinator turnover with what he's brought to you. So
exactly right. Yeah,
I think I'm in complete agreement with how you phrase that.
All right. We will talk to you all again very soon this week because of the shortened week.
Absolutely. I want to thank you all for feedback on social media, feedback in general. 200 questions in 2 hours, or 172 questions in 2 hours, is absolutely absurd and very much appreciated. Like you said, we'll talk soon. Thank you again for your listen, and look forward to talking later this week.